too short. Here it is in the flesh. It was written by Rabbi Dr. Twersky. It's called the Bracha. He was nifter a couple of years ago. Maybe this past time, I don't know, recently. And I got this book, Rabbi Feuerman, Shmuel Bracha, recommended it. And I'm working now on a giving a session to parents on, I think the name of the topic is going to be the five worst things to mess up your kid's self-esteem.
Sounds like a winter vibe.
Yeah, sounds like a, yeah.
So, come in. The five worst things you could do to mess up your kid's self-esteem. That's why I'm working on a
parenting.
I don't know what you got, parenting vibe. So, I'm starting to prepare for that. It's like in a couple of weeks. So I want to help Hanan. Thank Hanan, who's he helped me prepare for this. I actually showed him this book for a different chapter, and he showed me a later chapter, which Gufa discusses this, so it has it's a fantastic topic, and so I figured I'd just open up. I'm only going to speak for a few minutes, and I assume you're going to have more questions. Mm-hmm. And since the whole point of the Chinuch Vad is to machlokas, what the point of the Chinuch? Yeah, so yours. What's the point of the Chinuch Vad? The point of the Chinuch Vad, I don't view it as such great Torah to say. I was just saying over Dvarim Pshutim. It's just an opportunity to get together, gets you out of the yeshiva. You guys are like snowblind from being in that basement all day. And it's an opportunity to get away. I could easily do this in yeshiva, but it's just to get out. And what are we going to do when we're here? You know, we're going to give a shir on something, and no one's going to come. So we talk about, you know, just light. I have to make sure the food's, I have to thank my wife. Okay, so I'm just opening up this topic. If anyone has any suggestions, kashas, I'm really preparing the topic. So March 1st, my session to the parents is on March 1st. So this is like it's not even a trial run. It's just like opening up the topic. And maybe have some ideas.
So,
I don't even know if there'll be parents from the school. It's, you know, it's parents, so anyone can come. So, a couple of things that I learned. It's true. Okay, the first part is to know that if you have self-esteem and you have self-confidence, you're likely going to give over that self-confidence and that self-esteem to your kids, even without giving a session to them, because it trickles down. The nuances, how you carry yourself, how you speak, it conveys a certain aura that kids pick up on. So it's a very big advantage to working on self-confidence, self-esteem. First of all, you need it for yourself. Forget about your kids. You know, you need it for yourself. I had a Rebbe, I think we were in, 10th grade. No, 10th grade. I think it was 11th grade. And the Rebbe said, this is terrible modeling. But he said like this to the kid, I'll change the name to protect the guilty. Chaim. So it's shoin fafalin on you, but have rachmanis on the kinder. You were already messed up, but have some rachmanis on your kids. Please know, maybe you should learn something. Terrible, terrible line. Hysterically funny. But
are you serious when you said it?
He was dead serious. He was dead serious. So,
like social views?
Huh?
The person who said it like have social views?
The person who said it knew exactly what he was saying, yes. He knew what he was saying. You know, there are makomos akdoshim where you know, sometimes they're a band, but Dafka try to say sharp lines. They try to do it sharp. We don't hold to that, but in some places they hold of it. I think it's wrong. It conveys the wrong message. We'll see in a second, but we need it for ourselves. Forget about the kids. We can't give up on ourselves. We need, every person needs self-esteem. You can be 50 years old and you can still work on your self-esteem. It's very important just to get through the day, get through your job, get through that. A person doesn't have self-esteem. He's a doormat. He gets depressed. He gets, you know, walked on. He can't fight for himself. He, you know, is always frustrated because he always last in line. You know, you need self-confidence. I remember standing, I love telling the story, but I remember standing by Reb Chaim Kanievsky waiting to get in. I was first in line. I got there at 7:30 for a 10 o'clock slot, and no one's getting in front of me. But by the time he was receiving people, I was like 25th in line. Had to get in front of me. I was much like this. I was first in line. Had to get in front of me. But, you know, there were 25 people who were, you know, more self-confident than I was, who pushed their way in. I was gonna, you know, whatever. It's like there are advantages. Okay, so
is that like confidence or just being a bubble suit?
It's not relevant for the that particular story is not relevant. It's private. Okay, So I was going through. Obviously, if you have positive self-confidence, that will be conveyed. But if you have negative self-confidence, poor self-esteem, that also gets conveyed. So a couple of examples I thought I would say. Then I'm going to open the floor and ask you to give some examples. And
the self-confidence test.
Yeah, no, we're trying to come up with ways to mess up a kid's self-confidence. So, you know, keep it, we're not get too personal. So if you say a story, you can say, never say a story about yourself. Just say a story about yourself and someone else.
Just kids asking for a friend?
Yeah, asking for a friend, right. Okay, here's one. Okay, and this is in the book. Spending time with your kids. Now, obviously, everything can be contoured for Talmidim also, but let's take it with a kid. Spending time with your kids. It conveys a very important message that basically that you are important. I spend time with you, then you're important. So parents who don't have self-confidence, who don't have self-esteem, it's so interesting, you know, as Mary Twersky writes, they do not spend time with their kids. They don't get close with their kids because they can't. They don't have the self-confidence to get close. Yeah, you know,
well, they're not good enough.
Yeah, I'm not good enough, and you know, what will I say, and what will you think of me, and if I said that, and they can't do it, and it's very hard to, you know, relationships become very hard to develop because you don't have the self confidence, so you have good eye contact, and you don't have all these things get conveyed, and so what do those parents do? What a parent could do is, you know, and I'm too busy. I want to make sure my kids have what they need. I want to make sure they have, you know, I could pay their tuition. I could pay their college tuition. But why would a parent pay for their kid's college tuition? Like, let's say a kid was chas v'shalom very sick. Okay, he was sick in the hospital. Would he say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't pay for the doctor bills because I have to pay for keep the money for your college education? That's ridiculous. The doctor bill is much more important. The kid be healthy, otherwise the college education is going to help him. So it's the same thing over here, that the child needs the parent to be around and to convey that importance. It's assuming it's one or the other, it's more important than college education. First of all, we know that a lot of people do quite well without college. Like, you know, they I think the mystique of college is, you know, been broken. So, but the point is very, very clear that spending time conveys a very important message. So if you bring this into the chinuch realm, not necessarily of parenting, but parenting is chinuch, but, you know, One great way to convey to a Talmud that things are that he or she is important is by spending time with them. You spend time, you do special things. You know, sometimes you could do it as a group, so you could do it one on one. It conveys a message to the kid that you consider them very important. You respect them. You know, it's chashav. It almost makes no difference what you do with the time. You could do anything with the kid, anything the kid wants. You don't have to talk about anything deep. You just do mamish anything. It conveys such a amazing message that I consider you important. And be surprised how these little things make such a big difference.
I heard a recording once from Dr. David Lieberman, the Jewish psychologist. He was talking about, I guess, this point. And he was giving a lecture once, and a mother came over afterwards. And I guess he knew it was coming a little bit based on questions that this person had been asking throughout their lecture. And was like, and asked, you know, she said she had a daughter, like a 12-year-old daughter who was overweight, and wanted to know if Dr. Lieberman could speak to her. Or if he has any recommendations for therapists for her. So he said, well, what for? So I figured, you know, she's overweight, she's not doing so well at school. I figured she could just use a boost of self-esteem. So Dr. Lieberman said, back to her, I can't imagine anything better than why don't you pick her up from school every day and give her carrots as a snack. That'll be the best, that'll probably be the best thing for her. And the mother said, well, that's very hard. And Dr. Lieberman kind of...
Why is it hard?
Because it means spending the time. And instead of her going on a carpool, bus, whatever, it means her going and you know, picking up the daughter every single day from school. So Dr. Lieberman, I guess he knew he could do this in this situation, kind of lashed out. He says, okay, so if you want, you could do what you want, and then come 10 years down the line, after 10 therapists and her going for a drug addiction rehab, you could tell me I was right. Something like that. Some sharp line, and then the woman started crying, and he said he was silent.
You were there for this?
I was listening to this recording. He was saying over the story. He was saying over the story that happened.
Wow, this is like, sounds like a great vibe. I thought it was going to say, like, you know, to get her carrots. She's going to say, why are you giving me carrots? Because you think I'm fat! And she gets, like, insulted. I know you bring me carrots. Everyone thinks I'm fat. They bring me carrots.
The point was he was emphasizing that spending time with the child, that's the best thing you can do. And no therapist. Therapist is not just going to inject, like, a pill for self-esteem.
It's very true. It's the easiest. You know, in chinuch, be careful. You can't spend time alone. You know, we're not getting into the safety part, but that's the first you sowed.
But that rationale of, oh, it's hard, that could also be something that parents could...
We have to analyze, you know, things that we have to do that easily get pushed off. It could even be holy things, chashuv things, learning things. But that can make a cheshbon nefesh, eskashayla of, you know, I don't even know if I did the right thing myself. There was one Talmud I had who was unusually mature at like 12, unusual mature. So Dr. Jacob told me that, of course, the kid's so amazing. His father got married very, very late, and he basically had to raise his children when he was in his 40s and 50s. So I would have raised my kids in their 40s and 50s, they also would have turned out normal. Dr. Jacob said that. Don't tell his grandchildren, you know. But he said that if you raise your kids in your 40s and 50s, you're a wise person already. Most people raise their kids when they're in their 20s and 30s. So in 20s and 30s, you know, the 30s is different than the 20s, but you're raising kids in the 20s, you know, most people don't know what they're doing. They try their best. It's not so easy.
But doesn't that come with experience, not age?
That's what 40s means, your experience.
But if you didn't have kids, how were you experienced?
It's okay. You know, they say that the Chazon Ish told someone who just said this? The Chazon Ish told someone who was trying to get back their grandchildren, having their first grandchild, and
the grandchild was born while they were in flight. The Chasnish told the person to, you know, for kibbutz, go back to the hospital with the baby, because ain't it doma, the simcha that your father will have seeing his first grandchild in the hospital, than at home, after he got home. So just go to the hospital and she'll see you there. Don't take away that simcha that he had. It was a Holocaust survivor. Don't take away that simcha, which is remarkable, knowing that the Chasnish did not have any children. Did not have children. And he understood the difference between, you know, saying Mazel Tov at home or while they're still in the hospital, with a different darga. So, yeah, people, you know, certain great people were able to empathize remarkably. So, so just spending time. The first thing is just spending time. It is a big self-esteem builder. It doesn't take any chachma to do it. You just like basically just have to sit there. By the way, it's not bad for, you know, in marriage also. Chassan time, but sometimes just, you know, being around is helpful. When I was first married, so I was my voice went down on purpose. When I was first married, so I was in Kollel, and there was a Chanukah Chagiga in Yeshiva in Chavetz Chaim. So we went. I was a member of the Kollel. We went with my wife, you know, and my wife was in there as a Nashim, and one of the Rebbeim were there and was saying hello, and the Rebbe came over to me and says, you know, I asked your wife how it's going. She said, we're good, but she said that you're like barely home. I said, nah, it's ridiculous. I'm always home. So he said, okay, let me tell you a rule. It makes no difference if you're always around, if your wife thinks you're never around. And it makes no difference if you're never around, if your wife thinks you're always around. It makes no difference. They just think you're around. So your kids have to think you're around. It doesn't mean, that sometimes it doesn't require time. It requires quality time. You have to figure out when you can create the quality time. I'll tell you a maysa, and privately, if you'll ask me who, I'll tell you who, but don't ask me in public. Yeah, I'll tell you who, because he gave me brishus to tell the story. So we had a situation of a Rebbe who was, you know, struggling to make ends meet, and here in Miami. Do we know the story?
The bus story?
Yeah, it's a fantastic story. So that was right now we have like 27 buses of all the different divisions, maybe 30 buses. But just 8 years ago, we had zero buses. So we went from zero to 30 in like just a few years. The yeshiva's annual budget for busing is like, it's close to a million. Not a million, but it's a little under $1 million, and it's killing us. But back in the day, we were trying to figure out ways to, it was costing a lot of money, so I came up with a great chop. Instead of hiring a bus company, it cost us like $40,000 for a minivan, not a minivan, a van. So we'll buy the van, buy a used van for $25,000. We'll pay the Rebbe $40,000 or $30,000. The Rebbe would have to go to Miami Beach, pick up kids, bring them to yeshiva, I think it's elementary school, and then bring them back at night at 4:30, take them home and get back. Take, you know, a half hour each way. Done. $40,000. Where can you get a job for an hour before you work and an hour after you work? There's no such thing. To make $40,000, that's going to change this whole halach. Like, it's like going from $60,000 to $100,000. It's like brilliant. I was so pleased with myself. It was a brilliant idea. I went over to him. I cleared with everyone, like, don't hire the bus. They said, okay, you tell us, we'll give it to the Rebbe. Oh, fine, you're right. Might as well, if you're paying the same money, give it to him. So I went over to the Rebbe, and I tell him, I'll get back to you. I said, you're not going to do it? He said, I don't think about it. So I call him back the next day. He says, Rabbi, thank you very much. I'm not going to do it. You're not going to do it? Why? So he said, you know, I know I'm struggling, but I can't imagine that the Baruch Shalom is going to give me parnasa when I won't be able to do homework with my kids. So I said, why did you do homework afterwards? You do homework on Sundays. I don't know. just you'll figure it out. It's, you know, $40,000. He says, what are you going to do? What's going to happen? He says, I'm hoping my wife will get a full-time job. She had a part-time job. I said, she's been trying to get that full-time job for close to 10 years. They're not giving her that full-time job. They don't have one. Why is it going to change? Because I can't do it. So Hashem will send me the money in a way that it'd be good for my kids. Hashem's not going to send me panos that's bad for my kids. I don't believe that proper bitachon. So I was so angry at him. And he said no. Okay, Shiva had to go a different route. Anyway, he called me up 2 days later. 2 days later. His wife been trying to get a job for 10 years in one particular place. And she didn't want to change companies, but they weren't giving full-time jobs. 2 days later, he called me. You won't believe it. They offered her a full-time job. 2 days later. Pays $40,000 more. And he can do homework with his kids. So, but why do you think it was so important for him to do homework with his kids? It wasn't just that, the kids are stupid. The kids are very bright. But he felt that was important to, you know, the relationship building with the kid, spending time with the kid, that develops all these things, self-esteem, self-confidence, you know, Masara, all these nuances are very, very important. So it's just, that's a great testimony about Bobby Tuchin, to have proper Bitachon, to know when to use it, when not to use it. I was embarrassed, gladly, I was embarrassed that I was wrong. And, you know, and he was right. You know, he's, yeah. Yeah, privately. So it's just an amazing story. Okay. I'm going to go with one more, and then I'm going to throw out the floor to you guys. Okay, every kid has to learn to know the difference between good and bad, right and wrong. So how does a kid learn the difference between right and wrong? How do they do that? There's only one way to learn the difference between right and wrong. The kid learns that every kid touches something that's too hot and they get burned. That's how they learn that hot things are hot, you shouldn't touch them. The youngest infant learns not to touch that, it's too hot. Or not to eat something, it's too hot. So a kid has to learn right from wrong by doing wrong things and the parent correcting them. It's like I'm on this kick now in learning that the only way to get the right shot is if you stop with the wrong shot. It's such a great, I realized that. It's such a idea. No one ever opened a Gemara and just came out, well, right pshat. You have a pshat, you have a kasha, a teretz, another kasha, eventually you come up with right pshat. But your original pshat was wrong. So maybe you slugged it up and came up with the right pshat. So the sotu over here, the way kids learn right from wrong is by doing wrong things and then they get corrected. But it has to be done, they have to be corrected in a way that does not generate shame and embarrassment, because then what the kid learns, this is not my Torah, even though I would say the same thing, but this is on the book, so if you want to take a look at it, you could. But then the kid learns that something's wrong with them and not wrong with their behavior. So if the correction is done that the child is bad, then instead of learning that what they're doing is right or wrong and learn how to behave properly, they get a terrible message that they're bad. So they learn nothing about behaviors, and then their self-esteem gets destroyed. That would be the second. First thing is not to spend any time with them, because then they feel like shmata. They're not worth the time. It's not important to them. And the second thing I'm bringing up here is that if they're corrected in ways that bring about, generates embarrassment or shame, so that would be very bad. That's why we don't embarrass kids. They do the wrong thing, because then they think there's something wrong with them. So it's and that is crucial.
Can I say two ways of saying it to you? Like, how would you?
Give me the behavior.
Murder.
They haven't lost in touch, but I don't think I want to pick on
it. You should never say what's wrong with people. Uh-huh. You should never use those words like you, like.
what's wrong with you? How could you do this?
Yeah, let's say a kid is cheating on a test, court cheating on a test. So I guess the wrong thing to do is say, you're the most dishonest person I've ever met. You should be ashamed of yourself to cheat on a test. So that, not that, I haven't heard people, teachers and babes say that, but that would not be the right, best, that would not be the best way to say it. Because then you're telling the kid that they're dishonest, and the way to say that is that I would much rather you get a 20 of your own. That would be more meaningful to me to show me, even if it's 20 points worth out of 100, that would be much more to me. I'd be more impressed, and you'll get more benefit from that than any grade higher that's not your own would not be important to me. I don't know, something like that.
Let's say the kid is just like used to his parents talking that way.
Used to his parents what?
Let's say the kid is used to his parents talking that way. Does it still affect him the same way? Is that just like he grew up that his parents talked that way?
Like you're
that
you're,
like there's like, I don't know, like mean or whatever.
He has more to overcome. He'll have a bigger hurdle to overcome. Yeah, obviously anything. Any Nisayan can be compensated for, hopefully. You know, I'll tell you a good part I heard from Shmuel Kamenetsky, B'shem Shmuel Kamenetsky. I heard it with such a great imitation of Shmuel that it's almost like I heard it, heard it myself. But at a Torah Masorah convention, the question was asked, I'm a Rebbe of a fourth grade, and we daven together in the morning, and one kid comes in every morning and just says he davened. What should I do? He davened already. What should I do? So Reb Shmuel says, the kid says he davened, so he davened. So the Rebbe, not the herring that Reb Shmuel understood the question fully, decided to press Reb Shmuel. It was a bad idea to press Reb Shmuel, and he said, the Rashiva should know that it's not like I don't know what happened. I know for a fact he didn't daven. Maybe it was his own kid. I know for a fact he didn't daven. So, like, you know, the kid's lying through his teeth. Reb Shmuel got it the first time. So Reb Shmuel said, I don't care. I don't care. If the kid says he davened, he davened. Then he said the explanation. He says, when you tell a kid that you're lying, you're teaching him to be a liar. When you tell a kid that if you say that's the truth, if you say that's what happened, I believe you, then you're teaching him to be a Baal Emes. It's a great insight.
Because they're going to feel guilty about themselves.
Okay, we could analyze it together. Why?
Well,
why
can't be taken the wrong way at all. That I can shape the truth however I want. I mean, that's the way.
Reb Shmuel was saying, Reb Shmuel said that if you tell a kid, if you say that's what happened, then they accept it, then you're teaching him to tell the truth, even though he was lying at that moment. But you're teaching him, what he's learning from that is that he has to be a trustworthy person.
Right, but there's no chashash that he might take it the exact opposite way.
Probably assuming that the Rebbe
does. Reb Shmuel said not. Reb Shmuel says that, I do hear that.
But it's probably
you're teaching the kid that I have such confidence in you. The kid may feel guilty the next time. He's not going to feel bad. I lied to Reb Shmuel. How could I do that? I shouldn't do that. Next time I'm going to tell him the truth. I want to be proud of me. You know. Yeah. What do you say? You sound like you're about to say a good story.
No? I have a lot of good stories, but it's not really related to that. It's related to the whole
conversation. Okay, I'm listening.
Just a related story that actually is true, that the negative effect doesn't really help, and that the positive, like, enforcement works. I was a model student through sixth grade, and then in seventh grade, I was a model student. I got suspended. My father picked me up, and instead of yelling at me and telling me I'm the worst kid ever, whatever, this is after a whole year of being a troublemaker. Thank God my mother picked me up. So my father came up, and he took me home, and I don't know, and he just kept saying, calls me, and then he opened up the safe and starts teaching me about Hashem. And I don't remember all the times that I got yelled at. I remember that I will remember this for the rest of my life, because that meant so much to me. Like, he, instead of yelling at me, I was expecting to be yelled at, and I may have done it to get yelled at, and he didn't yell at me, and he just taught me about Hashem, and I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
Great story. Thank you for sharing it. Okay, so anybody have any good examples? Either way, like as Hanan said, you know, I'm asking for a friend. You know, anyone have any good stories that would speak to either some of the examples we gave of spending time, or ways to correct that don't bring shame or do bring shame, or how we felt or how other people felt, or any other, you know, question, insight on, you know, what we've seen people do to mess up kids, you know, positive thinking.
I heard something like similar to this original story, that the way you should like address a kid, let's say like a kid ate some cake he shouldn't have eaten, and you see that crumbs in his mouth, so you know he ate it. So you shouldn't go over to him and say, "Did you eat the cake?" Because they will teach him to say no. So you should say, "Why did you eat the cake?" Instead of like, if you say, if you approach it a different way, then you teach him to say, because of course he's going to say no, it's like stickle in the ear, and you teach him to like.
Okay, very nice.
You should accuse him.
You
should
accuse him.
You're
accusing him.
Say,
don't eat it. Why did you eat the cake?
I would say, you know, the question of why do you eat the cake is maybe not even necessary.
Right. There's nothing wrong with eating cake in the first place.
Yeah, I don't know about the scenario, but
let's say he wasn't supposed
yeah,
to.
Yeah, you're taking away that first thing of why did you eat the cake? Because you, what? Why did you eat the cake?
It's probably a good thing to like tell your kid whenever he messes up, like say to him like, that's a very normal thing that he messed up, and maybe when I was a kid, I had those same issues. It probably makes him feel.
The next scary. Thing in the next example he gives is that. It needs a little explanation. That's why I didn't want to discuss tonight, but once you're raising it, he does say that we're telling kids that what they're doing is, you know, is normal. They shouldn't think they're abnormal. They should think they're normal. And that also, you know, just like validating their, even if a kid's like doing the worst possible things, you know, they're, you know, throwing paper airplanes in the classroom and they're yelling on top of their lungs. So you have a chance to speak to the kid. You say, "Listen, I know it's hard." You could relate to that. I know it's hard. You know, it's probably you're bored. You just want to do something. You want to, you know, you're going crazy. You could say you understand where they're coming from, and then afterwards you say, "But you know it's probably difficult for the teacher to carry on his lesson. It's too boring for you, but other kids aren't."
It also like keeps the relationship with them, you know? Like, you can't like criticize someone in public. It never works. Like,
never works. Never.
Could you say, I also used to do that?
I
used to do that also, or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You have to use discretion. You have to use discretion on what it is. Yeah, if it's like I didn't pay attention in class, and more innocuous type of things that are just immature-based, yes, but paying attention says it's innocuous.
What's something you shouldn't say?
Huh?
For 2 hours, it's hard.
It's torture.
Right,
it's torture. That's okay. Yeah, those things are okay.
Right,
but
there
has
to be discipline in a class also. What's the balance?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm. People don't. Without explaining it, I don't want to say it out of term. I'll just say it. You know. It depends what the teacher thinks when the kids are misbehaving. If the teacher understands that it's his fault that the kid's misbehaving, because if he had a good, robust, well-prepared lesson, the kids would all be learning. So then, you know, I was talking to someone about this, one of their Rebbeim about this the other day, from another yeshiva, like, what do you do when a kid's head is down? So we want to make they want to make a rule that we're not accepting it. It's no tolerance for your head down in class. They asked me what I thought about this. I was laughing. I said, the no tolerance you're doing for the kid is just coming to school. He's paying to get an education, and the teacher, the Rebbe, is the one who's supposed to make the kid excited to learn. So the person who's not doing their job is the teacher and Rebbe, not the kid. So the zero tolerance, you're putting it on the kid, but the zero tolerance is on the Rebbe. I would say that if the kid the kid has his head down, so then you know that the Rebbe's not doing a good job, myself included. If you know, if the kids have their heads down, so like when I see a kid head down, I take it personally. I take it very personally, but not angry at the kid that you put your head down during my class. I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm such a bad Rebbe."
How perfect can you be though?
Yeah, your job. You know what is the percentage of kids that you think? What do you think would be acceptable for a Rebbe? Let's say 20 kids. How many kids would have to be engaged for you? Let's say you're the principal, for you to think that Rebbe is doing a good job.
90.
20 out of 20.
20 kids in the class.
90%.
18
kids. 90%.
20.
Yeah, 20. Just have 20. Now,
okay,
it's hard to do that, but that's the way it's supposed to be. I would guess that most Rebbeim would say 50%, if 50% of the kids are engaged, and teachers also, they'd be thrilled with that. So, you have to have a lot of tricks up your sleeve.
You can't just be someone who's knowledgeable in Torah.
Correct, that's correct. You cannot just be knowledgeable in Torah. In addition to being knowledgeable in Torah, you also have to learn how to create excitement, how to give over the lesson, ways that the kids could learn. You know, how to speak so kids will listen. You know, how to listen so kids will speak.
If you're not, you'll see that you're just like, your kids are, you're trying everything, it's just not working out, you should switch your job.
Become a special job.
You know, well, you have to do a good job, so learn how to do a good job. I'm saying to give up so fast. Maybe there are classes the person could take, but, you know, I don't think becoming a good Rebbe happens out of instinct. That's what I learned. Instinct is not enough. You also have to get trained. So I would say, you know, if a person wants to be a Rebbe, so he should... You know, do it now. You're learning. But a person wants to be a Rebbe. When he gets a little bit older, you should find someone. By then, you'll have friends maybe who are that or a little older. Ask them if you could sit in their class once a week for an hour. You just want to come sit in their class once a week, and then every month, you know, maybe you'll take over the class for a half hour while he observes. And afterwards can make corrections, tell you afterwards what you did right, what you did wrong, and you work on it. That'd be the ideal mahalach.
You know the meister for my foreman, the guy paid him
his
salary?
Yeah. Wow. I know, I have a friend of mine who got a job in Tiferes Moshe, for those people know Queens, elementary school, and he took a job teaching Chumash. Twice a week he was making $6,000. He went over to our foreman, Zichron Lebracha, who was the premier professional development mentor for Rebbeim in Chinuch, and he said, "I have $6,000 to give you. Whatever $6,000 gets me, I'd like you to be my personal trainer to be a good Rebbe. I'll be teaching at Tiferes Moshe." So Rabbi Foreman used to come once a month, or once or twice a month, to observe his class, and he had sessions with him. And he observed him, and he became a great, great Rebbe. It's brilliant.
He took the money?
Brilliant idea. Of course, that's his parnasa. He's a consultant, so he took every penny of it.
When I was young, I used to do this. Kids actually care about that.
What?
When, like, kids misbehaving, doing something in class, a teacher already says, when I was in fifth grade, I also did that, through a paper airplane. Do kids actually care about that?
I wouldn't care about that.
No?
I thought that was the whole thing of validating the parent, validating the child, saying, yeah, I also care about
that. That's innocuous. I don't think kids care about that. That's silly stuff. Kids, I don't think they have to be validated on that.
To a level, bro. Like, most kids right now are not doing airplanes.
Yeah.
But, like, higher level, like, in base matters, guys watching the Super Bowl. So, and Rebbeim say, when I was in base matters, I also watched the Super Bowl. But let's say high school. Would high school kids care about that?
Yeah.
you were a high school kid, did you care?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. No, it's like,
well, what's very not sure if they would care or if like
yeah,
you should say.
I know if that's the situation that needs a validation.
What situation?
The kid wanted to watch the Super Bowl. He wanted to watch the Super Bowl. He doesn't care what you did.
Do kids care what Rabane did when they were young?
No.
If it's something scary.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about the situation like that. I just made the. When you're disciplining, the kids, you just know you understand them. Like, I'll give you an example. Rabbi Feuerman was teaching a class. It was the first day of winter, and it was snowing. And, you know, all the kids, they want to go watch the snow. They want to go outside and play in the snow. And he came into the room, and he said, okay, guys, for the next 5 minutes, I'm going to set the timer. We're all going to go watch the snow. And he went, and he watched the snow for 5 minutes. But when the things, we're all going to come back to our seats and start learning. So, great. They went to watch snow, and they dinged, and they went back to their seats. That's understanding where the kids are coming from. That's validating their interest in the snow rather than Bittul Torah. You know, like, it's going to be Bittul Torah and Manoshah, whether you let them do that or don't let them do that. That's what I mean, understanding where the kids are coming from. So, you know, the kids are having a Super Bowl on their mind, if that's where the kids are holding. So, you know, a wise Rebbe, you know, use that to his advantage.
What about parenting? You shouldn't use that? You shouldn't say the words that I have those problems too.
I don't know. But
is there a downside to it?
There is a downside. You know, it depends. He gives an example. He gives one example like that. So it, in the right time, it's used. I don't, you know. If it's appropriate, yeah.
I don't understand. Trouble paying attention in class.
Yeah, that's okay.
So what would be a bad downside?
Huh?
What would be a situation where
I also went
say?
To therapy 2 years ago.
Yeah, you know.
Is it better to say I know someone that had something like this and saying you should like pay attention in class or just our friends to sit down for an hour?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like once it gets involved in like serious stuff, I don't know if that's necessary. I can understand there are a lot of, you know, a person does have to validate something, and sometimes it does help to say it's normal. But I don't know, that could go into every single avera that a person ever did. I don't know. Just
to
validate.
I think if Rebbe said that to me, I'd be like, okay, fine, look at you now, now you're Rebbe, so it's okay if I do it now.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I it's very hard for me to answer that question in a general sense. So, yeah, if there's a specific case, you know, I'd be happy to answer it. But in general sense, it has to hit. I have to feel it hits the spot. So,
we're just saying that like a Rebbe should a good Rebbe should have everyone behaving, but like the Maisa is not even like,
the goal. I'm saying the goal.
The Maisa is not close to
of course, the goal.
I know, but the more important thing that I wanted to convey is that when the kid's head is down, what are you thinking? Walk over and smack the kid and say, "How many times have I tell you not to put your head down?" So. What's your take?
Most pretty much every teacher can't teach the whole all 20 kids.
Is that true?
I'm saying is there any
Rebbe
in the school?
In the classroom.
They do one on one.
It's hard to do 20 at once.
There are only 10 Rebbeim in the school, but there's thousands of teachers instruction.
What percentage of teachers?
Anyone in our system like that?
Yes.
I've never had one.
20
No.
There are.
But that's right. It's 20 and 20. I don't think.
Who?
There are. Whatever. Not being recorded.
Every single kid.
There are.